Great. So let's see if we can do this in a more efficient way, I guess, than we would, because we're a little bit pressed for time. So last week we started the discussion of Rabbi Yochanan Talacha, right? Gazal v'onasai shu habaylam shneim in yochom lahakdes zelpi shen shlova zelpi shen reshusa, right? If you steal. So after Yeish, we know that the thief already is able to make the thing hektish, but before Yeish, then there's kind of a mutual weakness, right? The thief is still not able to steal it because it is not his, and the victim of the theft also cannot make it hektish because it is no longer in his reshut, right? It's no longer in his physical possession. That's a machlokas tanaim, right, between two brises we have. One brisa says that the victim of the thief cannot make it hektish. That's how Rabbi Yochanan paskins. And one brisa says that the victim of the thief can make it hektish as long as he hasn't had yeish. And that's how Rish Lakish paskins. Right. So the question that we're trying to flesh out is what exactly happens to the victim of the theft, which makes him no longer able to make his stuff hektish, and what kind of broader ramifications does that have? So we didn't read it all inside, but the Gemara so far has three things that the victim cannot do. He can't make it hektish, he can't redeem, let's say, like his Meiser Sheni or his Netter Ravai, which is the same as hektish, just it's the opposite, right? One is you're putting hektish onto something, the other is you're taking hektish off. And the third thing he can't do is he can't make things hefker. Okay, so the basic chakir we opened up last week was, is the problem here just there are certain things I can't do to my object because they're not in my control, right? It's not enough to own something, but if I want to impact in certain ways, then it's not enough to be in my bank account, but I have to have control over it. That was one possibility. The other possibility is that the ownership of the victim is already being eroded. Since it is no longer in his possession. We said if that's the case, the most likely reason why would the ownership be eroded? No, it's mine. Nobody, what affected my ownership? The answer would be the burgeoning, growing kinyane gneva, right? The fact that the ganov has seized the object and he is beginning to take control of it, right? So that is already beginning to push out the victim of the theft, right? So either we're going to say lack of control just affects what you can do, or we're going to say that lack of control really reflects a lack of ownership. We saw the Maharam in the back of the Gemara basically say this explicitly, right? When we were relating to the question of what exactly is Rabbi Yochanan's source. Is Rabbi Yochanan's source the pasuk of Kiyaktish ish as beso, right? The Torah says that a person can make his house hektish, right? And the drasha on that is you can make your house hektish, but you can't make other things hektish, right? And your house is something which is always, by definition, in your possession because real estate cannot be stolen, right? Land is always there. But the other pasuk Rabbi Yochanan quoted was vigunav mi beso ish, right? That you're only if money is stolen from you. And then a second thief comes along and steals money from the first thief, right? So Rabbi Yochanan holds that the second ganav is not going to pay kefel because stuff has to be taken mibeis ha'ish, mibeis ha'ganav, right? So the understanding there was that even though the object still belongs to the victim, right? Nonetheless, when the second thief comes along and steals it, he's not completely stealing it from the victim, he's also stealing it from the ganav, right? And so therefore, we see that perhaps the owner is not the full owner of the object, right? That second pasuk seems to indicate that that bialis is being eroded, right? At least on a simple level. The Gemara, yeah, on Samach Tes in the base, the Gemara asks, why did... Right, we said there were two positions in a Tanaim, yeah, right? Yeah, and then they asked.
I don't remember the Maharam's quoting the pasuk specifically.
I'm pretty sure he did.
I was just saying not to take Bikineva or.
Okay. He doesn't quote the actual pasuk, but he quotes the halacha about kefel. Right? He says just like regarding kefel, being not in your rishus is equal to not being yours because you are no longer called the baal hadavar. So too regarding hektish. Right? So he is putting the focus on kefel. And we had Riki Vega, right, who explicitly quoted that pasuk as the source versus the Rif who quoted ki hektish ish as beis as the source. Okay, right, so you could say that one is flowing from the other. Let's not get too wrapped up into that now. What I want to do today is we'll find some different, raya's and nafkaminas for each side. I apologize, I know I gave you that Tosfos Rid. I don't actually, I looked it over more. It's really important to know, I don't think it actually proves one side or the other in our question. It's fascinating. So say it out. Why?
He sort of proves both.
How so?
In terms of, he proves the idea of the significance of Yakish from the pasuk of Yakish Beito, and then explains why it only applies to the case of Ganav. In terms of that, why doesn't it apply to the case of Gazela?
Yeah, so the Gemara there says that if you have a Goslin, right? And then someone steals from the second Goslin, so the original victim gets to choose who he wants to sue, right? He gets to choose, does he want to sue Goslin A, or does he want to sue Goslin, does he want to sue Goslin B? Tosfos understands that is a contradiction to our Gemara, where we said, v'gunav mibesa esh lo mibesa ganav, right? That in the world of Geneva, you only have, he understands, you only have recourse to sue the first ganav, the guy who stole it from you. You no longer have recourse to sue the ganav who stole from the ganav who stole from you. So he's trying to figure out what the difference is between ganeva and gazela, why in gazela you can steal from both, and why in ganeva you can only steal from one. And what did he say exactly? So how did he invoke...
What was the purpose of both of them? Pasuk of Ishkiak Nishbeit To is to him the same lies behind the same concept as the pasuk So he proves based on that would be in both cases, Rabbi Yochanan holds that in both cases, whether or not that there's Yeish makes no difference. And that's like the top of the write-up from using that as pasuk explicitly from the Makkah of something, is that in both cases there's no Yeish. Whether there is Yeish or there is not Yeish, the same din applies. And that is something we only find by Kaneva, that's hence the pasuk is by Kaneva, not Gazela, therefore he actually finds use for the second pasuk to only implicate Kaneva for that same din.
It's not helpful to either side of the question. But what the Rid does say is he says, we see from Rabbi Yochanan that the victim of the theft still is the owner, right? The victim of the theft still is the owner of the object. After all, the thief also can't make it hektish, right? But there are just certain things that you can't do anymore, right? The victim can't make it hektish. He still owns it. But he can't make it hektish. So since you still are the owner, right, even after it's been stolen from you, so that indicates to me that I should be able to sue thief A and I should be able to sue thief B. Right? After all, I still am the legal owner of the object, so if it's stolen, then I get to sue the thief. He says the reason why you can't sue Ganav B is because there's a difference between Ganeva and Gazela. That Ganeva, in order to be called Ganeva, it has to be not only taken from you, but it has to be taken from your Rishas. Right? Vigunav Mibesaich, it's not considered a Ganeva unless it is really wrested from your possession, not only from your ownership. But Gazela doesn't have that higher threshold. Gazela only has to be taken from you. It doesn't have to be taken from your Rishus, because the Pasuk didn't say V'guzal mi beis ha'ish. It only said V'gunav mi beis ha'ish. So therefore, we have a higher threshold for what constitutes a Maisa Geneva versus what constitutes a Maisa Gazela. But I don't think you see from there for sure whether he thinks that there is a lack of an eroding ownership when it's not in your Rishus, or if he just thinks that there are things you can't do and there's a chiddush of Geneva that has to be taken from your possession. I don't know if you can prove one way or the other from Tosfos Rid that he... At first I thought you could. At first I thought you could prove from Tosfos Rid that he thinks that there is an eroding element of ownership in...
By Geneva you could.
In Rishus?
I guess Geneva you could. Maybe not Gazela.
In Geneva, so in Geneva, if it is not in your Rishus, there cannot be a Geneva, right? The second thief is not going to be Chayav Kefel, because the object is no longer in your possession. The question is, does that tell me that it is no longer fully yours? And you would say, right, to be Geneva, it has to be 100% yours, and to be Gazela, it has to be 90% yours. Right, that's what I was thinking at first. And I was thinking, oh, this is a great proof that he thinks that not in your Rishus means there is an erosion of ownership. But the truth is, that's not true, because he could just as easily tell me, he could say, there is a, in order to be considered a Maisa of Geneva, not only is it sufficient to take something that's 100% yours, but the manner in which I take it must be different, right? I have to take it not only from you, but from your possession, right? So Geneva, we could say Eina Bershuso is 100% yours, but the action that's considered an act of theft has a different standard for Geneva versus for Gazela. Right? That the Tosfos Rid could go either way, so I apologize to put that in the sources. It's great to know, but I don't think it's a proof for our local question. But the good news is that there are a bunch of local proofs for our question, one way or the other. The first is this Gemara on Lama Vav Mubeis, right? The machlokas between the Rif and the Machamos and the Bahamar, right?
Lama
I think is that Lama Vav? Where did I say it is? Did I just give the wrong draft?
Well,
we actually couldn't find. Oh, so Lama Vav. We went to Lama Vav,
and we couldn't find the Bahamar.
And we couldn't
Lama
find.
Like we looked back and forth, and we looked above the piano, but we weren't sure which one.
Okay, so you didn't see any of this at all?
We saw the Ritva.
Okay, but on the section of...
The Ritva on Lama Dalet?
The section of Gan of Shirot to the Shalim?
No, we couldn't
find it.
Darn it.
Where was it?
Okay.
What? But this always happens, by the way.
One thing that we can't do ends up being the main thing of Shir.
Yeah.
But we couldn't find it anywhere. It wasn't on Lama Dalet.
Oh,
Ritva,
man.
Okay,
so I'll say it outside. The truth is, it's not so complicated.
Sorry.
My bad. Let me know if
no, usually we do email you, but this was last night.
Got it.
Wow.
Where is
okay.
it?
Because it was at the end, so.
Yeah.
We looked in, like, a few different versions also.
Different versions.
So, different, you know what I mean?
Oh,
different publications. Yeah.
Like you're comparing like the
Mama
Vavu Venice version
right,
versus
yeah.
very Michael Stanislavski.
You looked on Lama Dalet.
Where is it?
Okay, so it's did I say it's Lamed Vav Mebet in the Gemara. And then it's the Rif Raven about Hamar on Lamed Vav Mebet in the Gemara.
Oh,
that's my bad. Okay, so that's on me.
No, that was also on us.
Okay, whatever it is.
That was on us.
Oh, Oh, that riff. Well, I saw that, yeah.
Oh, you did that?
Okay, so the... Ooh, let me turn this off.
He looked for some of my...
So we couldn't just do the...
Yeah, no, so we...
Okay.
That was our bad, sorry.
Okay. Fine, so I'll just try to be extra there. So the Gemara has a case, right? So one person was suing another person for damages, right? And in court, they rule that he has to pay a small sum of money, right? So you know, I'm going to tell you this. So I have Reuben, Shimon, and I have the Beis Din, right? So the ruling was Reuben has to pay, let's say, 50 cents, just for convenience, some small sum, to Shimon. Shimon says, I don't need 50 cents, right? I don't, that's a useless sum of money to me. Give it to the poor people, right? Give it to the aniyim. And then Shimon says, yeah, I take it back. I want to get a soda, right? Let me keep the 50 cents for myself. So Rabbi Yosef tells him, too bad, right? He says, the Beis Din is anan yad aniyim anan, right? We are, the Beis Din is responsible, right? We acquire things on behalf of the poor. Right, and so when you said I'm going to give the 50 cents to the poor, so what happened was we had what's called a maimid shlashdan. Right, maimid shlashdan is when you have the three people in the room. Right, so it's a way of transferring a debt. Right, so if Reuben owes money to Shimon, so if three parties are in the room, so Shimon can say transfer the debt from you to you. Right, so when Shimon said give the 50 cents to the poor people. So then, what happened was, if there was a maimed shlashdan, right, and the 50 cents go to the Beis Din on behalf of the aniyim, right? So that's what the Gemara says. The problem is that we seem to have a halacha regarding how money is given to tzedakah, that just like, right, so normally when you make kinyanim, you have to actually give the thing to someone, right? In order to make a kinyan, you have to do the ma'isa kinyan. The exception is hekdesh, right? The halacha is amira le'gavoha ki mesira le'hedya, right? If you verbally dedicate something to hekdesh, so that has the same acquisitive power as doing a ma'isa kinyan, right? You could just declare, I'm giving this to hekdesh, now it belongs to hekdesh. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, and the same halacha applies to tzedakah. A verbal declaration giving something to tzedakah is binding as well. So the problem is, if you can just verbally give, if you can just declare, I'm giving something to tzedakah, and that's effective. So why did the Gemara say that, well, when Rabbi Shimon said, I'm giving the money to tzedakah, they keep it because the Beis Din acquires it on behalf of the poor through a maimed shlashdan? Why not just say it very directly? When Shimon said, I'm giving the money to tzedakah, that's it. He made a declaration, and the money now goes to tzedakah. Right? That's the question that all the Rishonim have to figure out. So the Rif says, no problem. Shimon could not have given the money to tzedakah because it was not bershusa. Right? So just like you can't make something hektish if it's eno bershuscha, right? It's not yet in his possession, right? The Reuben still has the money. So just like you can't make it hektish based on Rabbi Yochanan, you can't give it to the poor either. Right? That's the explanation of the ring. So even though normally you can declare giving money to tzedakah, if the money is not in your possession, you can't do that. So the Baal Mar gets angry with the Rif, as he always does, and the Baal Mar says that doesn't make any sense because Rabbi Yochanan only applies when the person who does have the money in his possession doesn't want to give it back to the person who's the victim, right? So then it's really not in your possession. It's not in your possession because the guy who has it doesn't want to give it back. But here, Reuben is about to give the money to Shimon, right? He's going to listen to the Beis Din. He's not being a recalcitrant defendant, right? So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's halacha should not apply. Rabbi Yochanan's halacha doesn't apply because it's virtually in your possession, right? Okay, technically speaking, it's not in my possession, but it's virtually in my possession because he's about to give me the money, right? So therefore, the Baal Hamar says that the Rif doesn't make sense. And instead, he paskins like some of the Gaonim who paskin against that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and think that you cannot make a verbal donation to tzedakah. That's what the Baal Hamar says. Fine. right, so he thinks that you have to have the guy fighting you to make it not in your possession. Right? Otherwise, it's de facto in his rishas. How does the Ramban disagree? So the Ramban disagrees with him on two fronts. Right? So the Baal Hamar is, what did Rabbi Yochanan say? Rabbi Yochanan said, right, you can't make hekdesh under one of two conditions, either if it's eno shalo, or if it's eno rishusa. Right? If either one is missing, either it's not yours, or it's not in your possession, either factor will prevent you from giving it to hekdesh. So says the Ramban to the Baal Hamar, guess what? In this case, both factors aren't there. It is neither, the money is neither shalo of Shimon, nor is it rishusa of Shimon. Why is it not shalo? Because did Shimon ever own the money? No, right? Bezin told Reuven, pay Shimon, but Shimon, all Shimon has is a claim. He has a debt on Reuven. He never made a kinyan on the money itself, right? And as we know from Kiddushin, right, you can't, you know, makadesh isha b'milva, eina mitudeshes, because milva lahotza nitna, right, debts are not considered under the ownership of the person who claims the debt. Right, so if the money was never, if Shimon never had a kinyan on the money, so it's eno shalo, and therefore, of course, he can't give it to tzedakah. Okay, that's point number one. Interesting, but not relevant to us. But then, the Ramban says, there's a second reason why he can't make it hektish, why he can't make it go to tzedakah, because not only is it eno shalo, but it's also eno bershuso. Why is eno bershuso? So let's take a look. It's just a one-liner. So take a look at the this like third mini paragraph of the Machamos. Just take a look at. It's in the quotes. Yeah. Right, you want to read it? Below Zobelvan. Below
Zobelvan, and the Sha'afa Hifrish Shepirash because don't need Yashu Habalim Inu Klu Sha'afa Pish Halur said Bitin Lo Inu Kadosh.
Okay, stop right there for a second. So the Baal Hamar had claimed, right, as long as the other person is willing to give it to you, then it is de facto in your possession, right? It's in your control for all intents and purposes, and therefore you can make it hektish. So Ramban says that's not true. Why is that not true? So what does that mean?
Meaning, I think it's sort of like the...
Let's translate it.
Even though Shalom said he can almost give it to him, it's not Kaddish. Why? Because he has it with Torah, through Torah's Gaza. As in that it's like, I guess that's the really start in Ruth Rishus, is it because sort of like the Maharam, sort of he's had as like a Shomer, he has this Torah's Gaza. It's like, it's not the traditional way that you have something in someone else's Rishus.
Exactly. This is, right, is this a practical statement or a formal statement that the Ramban is making here? What kind of argument is this?
What's a practical formal statement?
What's the reason why it's not considered Rishusa? Right, so is that a...
Formal.
That's a formal, right? That's a formal argument, right? Since the thief has the status of a Gazlan, right? It is in his possession as the status of a stolen object. Anything which, legally speaking, is a stolen object, by definition, is not going to be considered reshuso of the victim. So why should that be, right? If we look at reshus as just pragmatic control of the object, right? If I'm in control, then I can do certain things. If not in control, I can't do certain things. Then the Baal Hamar's claim makes a ton of sense, right? Practically speaking, you're in control, right? He's not withholding it from you, right? As soon as you show up to take it, he's perfectly happy and willing to give it to you. So what's the Ramban? How is the Ramban objecting to that when he says, formally speaking, it has the status of a stolen object? Who cares? It's a stolen object that he's going to give to me as soon as I ask him for it. So who cares if it's stolen? So the answer seems to be, right, that the Ramban is assuming that since it's a stolen object, therefore he's a gazlan, and that means that he has kinyane gazela, right? That means that by definition, by virtue of him being a thief, by him being halachically defined as a thief, that means that it's partially his, it's partially not yours, and therefore you can't give it to tzedakah in this case, because regardless of how nice a thief the other guy is, he still has it as a thief. He's willing to give it to you, right? If you go to the stock market, the market would make futures investments based on this because they assume that it's yours. But formally speaking, it's not. Formally speaking, this is a stolen object, and therefore it's going to be defined as ana bershusa. Okay, so that's right there seems to be one great way of capturing this question about the status of ana bershusa, right? For the Baal HaMar, it's just a pragmatic question of control, and for the Ramban, it's a formal question of kinyane geneva. Okay, so the kind of polar opposite position of the Ramban, right? The most radical rishus, like control oriented sheets out there. Is the Maharshal, which was quoted by the Kitzos on the question of when you can maktish something which is a mashkel, something which is a pikadon, right? So the Shulchan Aruch rules that if you have a pikadon in someone else's possession, so can you make a hektish? Yes, right? The Shulchan Aruch says as long as you have pikadon, you can make it a hektish. Why can you do that? Don't you need it to be in your rishus?
Well, then it really is in your rishus.
Exactly, it really is in your rishus, right? Even though it's in the house of your shomer, but he's your shomer, right? So it's like your rishus. That actually was another line that was in the Tosos Rid, which is good to see. The Tosos Rid said that explicitly. Right? He said that when it's a pikadon, then it's as if it's in your backyard, right? It's like your personal embassy, so it's like it's yours. Okay. So then the Kitzos quotes the Maharshal. Maharshal, by the way, right, his famous sefer is Yamshal Shlomo. Do you know what's called Yamshal Shlomo?
His name is Shlomo.
That's step one. But it's there are two extra levels on top of it, which is, I think it's one of the best names. Yeah, why it's Yam. So the original Yamshal Shlomo was Shlomo's big mikvah, right? The big
in
the Beis HaMikdash, right? So that's the Pasuk reference. But his goal in writing the Sefer was he's living like the generation of the Rama, and he's not happy that everybody is using all these Shulchan Aruch practical...
Drown it? Is that not... No.
Oh, what?
Like the Yam that would...
that's aggressive.
Yeah.
Maybe, but so he's not happy that people are using all these short cheat books, and instead he wants them to paskin based off of the old-fashioned way. You roll up your sleeves, you go to the Gemara, you go to the Rishonim, and you figure out the Psak, right? I don't cheat by looking up the Shulchan Aruch. So yeah, that's exactly the pun, right? That basically his own book is a C. Right, he wanted to write it on. He wanted to cover all of Shas, but it's so long and in depth in every topic that he got through like nine masechtos. But also, it's the reference to the Yam HaTalmud that we should be passing based off the Yam HaTalmud, and not based off of the Shulchan Aruch per se. But then his book is actually a Yam, just like there's the endless Yam HaTalmud. There's the endless Yam Shel Shlomo. So that's like all the levels of meaning behind the name of the Sefer. Anyway, so the Yam Shel Shlomo says, when can you make a pikadon hekdesh? Only if we're talking about a piece of land, right? You can only make something hekdesh. You can only make your pikadon hekdesh if it's land, because land, as we said, based on the pasuk of ishki yakdesh as beiso, land is the ultimate object which is always under your control, right? Because you can't make off with land, you can't take land anywhere; it's always there. So he says, if you have metaltalin, even if it's a pikadon in the possession of your most trusted shomer ever, right? He's your best friend since childhood. He's super loyal, whatever. Doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's not in your possession. It's in the possession of the shomer, and therefore you cannot make it. Hakdish, right? And the Ketzos argues, and the Ketzos brings all the Rishonim argue. We don't need to see that part, right? But just the position of the Maharshal himself is clearly the most radical, pragmatic, rishus-oriented view, right? Is this object in my hands that I can do something with? No, right? Now, the guy is going to give it back to me, and it's, almost virtually in my possession, but at the end of the day, it's not. At the end of the day, it's not in my house, and therefore, Marshall argues that I can't I can't make it Hakadosh. Okay, that's the radical other side of the coin. So a couple more proofs, right? So one is this question of Geneva Bishogi, right, / Mekach Taos, right? So this is the question that the Ritva was dealing with in Kiddushin. So if you basically, you have a Mekach Taos situation, right? You've given stuff as a Mekach Taos, so it's supposed to go back to you. So can you do Kiddushin with the stuff which is a Mekach Taos? Right, it's supposed to, the cashier, the chenveni, owes it to me. As soon as I notify him of the mistake, he will give me the money back. Right, so can those funds, which were given as a mekach taos, can I use those for kiddushin purposes?
Wait,
to
who would they give as mekach
taos? What? So Reuven gives money. Right, there's a misunderstanding, and Reuven gives extra money as a mekach taos to Shimon. Reuven knows it's mekach taos, and as soon as he shows that to Shimon, he'll get his money back. Can Reuven now go to Rachel and be Makadesh Rachel with the with that Mekach Taos money?
No.
Yeah.
So that's a great question. That's Machlokas between the Ritva and the Ktos. So the Ritva says,
what?
Yeah. Right. Right, the Ritva says Mekach Memkar is different from Gezel. Right, if something is stolen from you, then you obviously can't. Right, just like you can't give it to Hekdesh, you can't use it for Kiddushin. But Mekach Memkar is different, and the Ktso says that's not the case. Right, as long as it's Eino Bershuso, even though is it legally yours? Yes, right. Mekach Taos is halachically invalid, so it's legally yours. That doesn't matter. You still cannot. Be Mekadesh the woman. Okay. So the Ktsos's view I could understand, because, right, even though it's yours, it's not in your control. So I understand why, and he invokes the Riochanan, right? So I understand why you would apply Riochanan from a perspective of, even though it's yours, it's not under your practical control. The question is, why would I say that you could use the money, right? It's in the cash register of the Chenveni, so why would I say that it is considered in my rishus, so that I could give it to Hekdesh, I could give it to Tzedakah, I could use it for Kiddushin. What is the Ritva's rationale? So there are two explanations you could give. One is the explanation that he gives, and the other is the explanation that we would kind of love him to give. The explanation that he does give is, he says, this is a scenario of Tzayis Dina. Tzayis Dina means the person will listen to the court. Right, so this is basically similar to the Baal Hamar. Even though a hardened thief, so he wants to hold on to the money, the Ritva says, Sayastina, the Mekach Taos, this isn't a case of intentional theft. It's a case where as soon as the storekeeper is noted of the error, he will happily, eagerly, right, immediately, promptly return the money to the owner. Right? So since it's a case of Sayastina, we have a person holding on to the money who will listen to the court immediately and give it back. Therefore, it's still considered Bershusa. Right, that's what the Ritva says. Very reminiscent of the Baal Hamar, who said that as long as the guy's willing to give it back, it's Bershusa. And then the Machlokas and the Ktsos and the Ritva is just a question of how much Rishuso do we need, right? And you'll have, there's this whole spectrum, right, ranging from the Maharshal that it has to be, like, mamish yours, to the Ktsos, that it has, if the guy's holding on to it and doesn't even know that it's stolen, that it's, Mekach Taos, that's not enough. And the Ritva is the most makel, right? The Ritva says, look, as long as he will give it back to you when he finds out about the mistake, that's considered Rishusa, right? That's what the Ritva says. And so that just highlights, like, a range of control options. But the other thing you could have said was that, well, Rabbi Yochanan only applies when there are Kinyane Geneva. But perhaps if somebody has a Mekach Taos, right, or someone has, a Gzeila B'Shogig, are there Kinyane Geneva? No, because he never intended to steal, right? You had a Mekach Memkar agreement, right? That's kind of...
But he intended to buy it. He intended to be its owner.
Correct, but he never... But Kinyane Geneva are Kinyanim that come from my attempt to steal, right? They are, by definition, illegal Kinyanim, right? So they only happen when you are trying to wrest the object from the victim, right? If I'm only operating through legal pathways, then those are the only avenues of Kenyan. Right? Kenyan and Geneva come from my attempt to rip it from it. Right? So what you could have answered is a case of Geneva Bishogig and a case of Nachach Taos. We will say, you know, it's still considered Birshuso of the real owner, because who's the competing force? The competing force is not a hardened thief. It's not someone who's trying to push him out of the object. It's just someone who doesn't know any better. Right? In theory, that's what you could have said. Not what the Ritva seems to say if you read it carefully, but we should get that on there. Okay. Two more to nail down, and then we'll basically wrap up. So one, and here we can use the Ritva very happily, is the Ritva in Bava Metzia. Did you get to see this case? The case in the beginning of Hamafked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's ease your fellas in a little bit.
Okay. So we're talking about if you can be Maktish something that is Lo Bava Olamo yet, something that's not ready. So it gives examples. So one example are carrots that cal that haven't blossomed. Can you be Maktish, or can you... Well, I don't remember the rest of the cases. Yeah, I think the question is whether you can be Maktish those carrots that cal. Or that you can sell them. Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah.
So whether you can sell them.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is coming out of the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah, this is my eighth grade Gemara class, right? So the Mishnah, the beginning of Hamafkid, which tells us that, right, so if something is stolen from a Shomer Chinam, so normally if something is stolen from a Shomer Chinam, is he Chayav or Pater?
He is
Pater, right? And Shomer Chinam is the only Shomer who is Pater from Geneva. But if he wants, right, he can take a gamble. And he can say to, right, he can make an agreement with the mafkid, I'll pay you the karen, and if the thief is caught, right, then I will get the kefil, right? So he's gambling the principal on the chance that he'll get double payment. Okay, so the problem that the Gemara raises is, what's going on? Is the mafkid being machna the object to the shomer, right? How is the shomer gaining the rights to claim kefil, right? It's a stolen object, so the mafkid cannot transfer ownership of a stolen object, right? That's the whole sugya of Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, oh, no problem. They set up this agreement in the very beginning of the Shomer period, right? That in the event that it gets stolen, we will agree that retroactively the object has been transferred to your possession, and you therefore will be able to get kefil, right? So then that raises a question: do you need to have this retroactive construct in cases besides Geneva, right? So the other case, which is related to Geneva, which Hashem Rachim is Patr for, is Aveda, right? So that's where the Ritva comes off of this question. Can you transfer ownership of things which are not in your possession because they've been lost? And Ritva quotes his Rebbe, presumably the Ra'ah, who says you can. He says, yeah, right? We only are concerned about a lack of Rashus if there's theft. But if there is a veda, then you can totally transfer ownership, right? So if right, so if the Shomer Chinam loses the object and he says to the mafkid, you know what, you know, here you I'll pay you the money, and if the object is found, I'll keep it. That works, right? Because you can do kinyanim according to the Ritva of objects, even though they are not in your possession, as long as they're not in your possession due to loss, not due to theft. And then the Ketzos disagrees with that Ritva, right, and he exactly brings in the question of things which are lo baliola, right, and he says that...
Well, the way the Gemara brings up the discussion is by framing it by things that are lo baliola. Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's why I was talking about the Pierre Deco. That's the first example, and then it's... What about a Geneva? Can you sell?
Oh, yeah, you're correct. Right, 100% right. Right. Very good. Excellent. Yeah. Right, that's like on the bottom part of the Amud, and then they go to the top part of the Amud.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, 100%. Excellent. Okay, great. So then, right, at the end, so here we have, we do have a machloka, so between the Rebbe of the Ritva and the Ketzos, right? Ketzos says you can't transfer ownership, doesn't matter if it's lost, doesn't matter if it's stolen, can't do it, right? So the Ketzos is a consistent thinker because he didn't like what the Ritva had to say about the Mekach Taos case, right? And he also doesn't like what the Ritva has to say about the Aveda case, right? Except here it seems like the Rebbe of the Ritva really, really thought that Rebbe Yochanan is all about Kinyani Geneva. Because, practically speaking, what difference does it make if the object was lost or if it was stolen, right? It's certainly not in the control of the, you know, the hapless mafkid, right? But the answer is that there's nobody pushing out of the object because there's no ganav, and that's going to be the key difference. Okay, so that's one nafkamina right there. And then there's one more. This I saw that Rabbi Rosenzweig pointed this out, and I think it's a great point. Let's go back to our original Gemara. For one case where it makes a lot more sense to explain Rabbi Yochanan based on the ganav kinyan pushing you out as opposed to just a lack of control. Samach Teh, I believe. Amar Abaye, I have it as. Oh, Amar Lamed Vav. That's not helpful. I had the Gemara open from above, which would not be helpful. I'm a bet. Okay. So the Gemara, right? So the Gemara presented this debate between. It's a little bit. We skipped some of the Gemara here, but the Abaye says that if he didn't know. About Rabbi Yochanan, who said that these two braisos were different, he would have thought the brais of Tznuin and the brais of Rabbi Dosa are the exact same. So the brais of Rabbi Dosa is you have one second, let me get the details down. Now there's a halacha of leket, right? Halacha of leket, which is that there's you know, certain things which are dropped, and then the poor people get to pick them up, right? And that's what Rus is doing. She's picking up all the leket and the shekcha, right? So if the owner of the field or his workers leave certain sheaves of wheat behind on the field, so then the poor people can pick them up. The problem is that there are very detailed halachos over which dropped grain is considered leket and which dropped grain is not considered leket, and not all of the aniyim are experts in the detailed halachos of which grain they're allowed to pick up and which grain they're not. So you can have a case where aniyim are picking up all this stuff, which is stolen property. There's a machlokas in the Gemara. Basically, what they would do is they would the owner of the field would mafgir the stuff that the aniyim were picking up, right, in order to save them from stealing. So the question is, right, can they be mafgir stuff once it's already been taken? So maybe they can, maybe they can't. How do we bring a Yochanan? Maybe they do this retroactively. Maybe they don't need to do this retroactively. That is a whole debate that was going on Samach Tes Amid Aleph. But what what Abaye here suggests is perhaps we could have said that the reason why, let's say, we would make a special allowance for the making the stuff hefker for the poor people would be because we would invoke the rule of hefker bezdin hefker. We would allow the owner of the field to make his stuff hefker. How can he make his stuff hefker? Didn't the aniyim take it? No problem, right? You know, the bezdin wants to help the aniyim out, so the bezdin will say hefker, bezdin, hefker on everything that the aniyim took, and then the owner can say, now it's hefker. Now I once again can declare that I'm not interested in any of my stuff, and then the aniyim can go back and. can go back and take it for themselves without violating theft. The problem is that how are you helping anything by invoking? No, he doesn't even. Sorry, he doesn't quote Hefker Bez and Hefker. He says, Avdu Rabbanan Takanta, right? That the Rabbanan would make a takana. So the question is, what takana could the Rabbanan make to help you in this situation, right? If the whole problem with, so normally the default assumption is that the Rabbanan makes the takana of Hefker Bez and Hefker, right? That they'll undo the kinyan of the poor. But if the problem with making your stuff Hefker is that it's just not in your control, so what good does it do that the Rabbanan undid the kinyan of the poor, right? Okay, so now the poor don't have it, but now it belongs to me again, right? All they did was the Rabbanan undid their kinyan. Now it's still mine, but it's not in my possession, so I can't make it after, right? I'm stuck, so the Niyam are still going to be stealing. So that's not helpful for the Niyam. So the easier way to explain this is that the reason why Rabbi Yochanan's halacha works is that you are losing ownership due to the theft of the other guy, right? And then once the Rabbanan say, Avdu Takanta, right, the Rabbanan made a Takana, we don't want the poor people to be stealing, so we'll invalidate their kinyan, then it reverts to your ownership, and then you can make it after, even though it's not in your possession. That doesn't matter, because the Rabbanan have nullified the whatever kinyan the Aniyah made, and that will allow you to assert your rights as the owner, as if it is in your rishus, right? So that approach kind of explains this part of the Gemara a little better. Okay, fine. So that's basically it. Did you see the pasuk and shoftim and all? Do you see what I put on there? So okay, it's cute. It doesn't really shed any light on our question about how exactly zelafishin and rishusa works. But it's Parak Yud Zayin and Shoftim, right? So you can get it open, you'll see what's going on there. And just take a look at Pasuk Gimel and you see what the problem is.
Oh, I see.
Parak Yud Zayin, right? Let's do the first three Pasukim, right? You see what's going on there? Right? Pasal Micha?
Gives the kesef to his mother, and then his mother tells him to make it
hektish. Right, so that could potentially be a problem.
Right.
Potentially be a problem, because...
But then if now it's in her possession, how can he make it
hektish? Or the other way around, right, because she's making it hektish. Right, doesn't she make it hektish?
Well, so maybe no, hektish, I think. She'd be making hektish.
But she has it now.
Yeah, so she's making hektish.
So that's exactly what the Mefarshim try to figure out. So, because it's, if you just read the Pasuk literally, right, Pasuk Gemal, so Micha gives the, right, Micha returns the money to his mother, and then his mother said, I made this money hektish.
Oh, hektish,
that's good point. She says in the past tense, right? She doesn't say, you know, I'm makdesh at the money. She said, I made it hektish. So the question is, when did this happen, right? Was she telling him, is the case, Micha's, I'm really sorry, Ma, here's the money back. And Micha's mother says, don't give it back to me, I already made it hektish when it was stolen from me. Or is Micha's mother telling him, thank you very much, and now I will make it hektish, right? And then obviously her idea of hektish is not really a good one. So the Mefarshim, you have people go on both sides. So Rashi says, what does his mother say? His mother says, I accepted upon myself when it was stolen from me, I vowed that when, in the event that it would be given back, then I would make it hektish. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas the Radak says, first Micha gave it back, and then the mother says, you know, I now declare that this is going to be hektish, right? So there's a cool case where you have two approaches of the Mefarshim, very quietly, taking Rabbi Yochanan and working him into the story of Pasal Micha. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. What?
sure about it. I'm running Shoftim.
Oh, very cool.